Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have chartered financial consultant and partner of LaBell & Harriman, Phil Harriman, and he's going to be talking about why succession planning is so important to business owners, leaders, and HR professionals. How are you today, Phil? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I feel like I'm a tulip bulb that has blossomed through the snow here finally.
It's finally great to be in May and have spring really blooming, isn't it? Thank God.
Well, first we got to get through mud season.
Well,
then
that's
we
true.
Can talk about summer.
That's true. Mud season. Well, you know, today we're going to be talking about a topic that everybody's talking about. It's the big buzz right now because of the talent management changes that have really happened over the last 6-8 months. We're really seeing a push for employers are hiring again. And they're kind of concerned about their leadership. They're concerned about succession planning. They're concerned about, you know, this topic of succession planning and what it really means and what it's all about. Tell me how you see succession planning being so important to businesses.
Well, I've been in the profession now for over 30 years. Right out of college, I started this firm that I am a founding partner of, and we talked about these issues back then. And frankly, it was a tough conversation because everybody was young, they were healthy, all the investments were going to turn out just great, and nothing was ever going to go wrong. And now 30 years later, these folks are in their late 50s and early 60s, and they built organizations, and they look back on it now, and they say, oh my goodness, I didn't start this and build this to see it fall apart in the end. And now it's important for them, not only for the pride of building and sustaining a business, but also the employees and the community and the value that they've created that they hope can be realized by their family as they move on towards retirement.
You know, business leaders are always concerned about the future, albeit they think a lot about the current situation, right? They don't always think as far forward as they should. How much did 2009, 2008, 2010 change the psyche of this?
That's a great question. It was a jolt to the core of most business owners who woke up one day and saw that the world had changed in such a fashion that the banks were becoming more difficult to renew lines of credit. It was difficult to get access to capital. Their employees were opening up their retirement plan statements and seeing their values of their account had plummeted. The world had changed, and the government was going to help us get back on track. We had this big, huge so-called stimulus package, job-ready investments in the economy that didn't turn out to be as robust as had been envisioned. So to answer your question specifically, it jolted the system. Everything that people had come to believe was predictable and normal was gone. And even more importantly, for people who were close to retirement or had just entered into their retirement years, they saw their accounts that they were planning on using to sustain their income in retirement take such a hit that they had to rethink whether they should go back to work or delay their retirement. So, yeah, 2008 and 2009 changed the world, at least psychologically, for most people as it relates to their finances.
You know, as we fast forward to 2015, a lot of people have seen some of those funds come back, mm-hmm. right? The market has certainly done better. Mm-hmm. We're certainly seeing some money back in the marketplace, though it's not quite to where it was, but it's certainly much better than it was.
Yes.
Why do you think suddenly this has caught on so much in terms of people talking about succession planning?
Every day in America, when the sun comes up, there's about 8,000 people who wake up to their 60th or their 65th birthday. And that's a time in most people's lives when they wonder, wow, where did all the years go? They understand that more of their days are behind them than are in front of them. They wonder what their life's profession has been worth, whether their great-grandchildren will even know who they are. And so they begin to think about their future in a way that's based on what has happened in the past. And fundamentally, the most important thing for most people, whether they're professionals or business owners or both, is they ask themselves, will I have enough cash flow to maintain my lifestyle in retirement? And will I be able to pass on a legacy to my employees, my community, and to my family?
Well, you know, these are the key points we're going to talk a little bit about today in terms of thinking about how leaders, business leaders, CEOs, whatever it is in terms of the organization or owners, really look at succession planning and how we're going to talk about it. So let's start at the beginning, right? Okay. Let's start at the front end of it. Somebody wakes up that morning, they're 60 years old, for example, or maybe they're a little younger, hopefully, and they actually start thinking about succession planning. And they go into their office, and they go to their HR professional, they go to the COO, they go to the CFA, and go, let's talk about succession planning. And everybody has that blank stare on their face and goes, succession planning, yes, sir, we'll get right on that. Yeah. And then they go and Google succession planning to find out exactly what exactly that means, because they may have heard about it, but they're not so sure. Where do you start? Well, you know, what's the process a company should really think about starting to make sure we hit all the key elements of succession planning?
You know, what you just said is very typical. And oftentimes, the people who are listening to the leader, either they're in the C-suite or they're the business owner, everybody kind of looks at each other out of the corner of their eye and go, wow, where did that come from? What happened? What happened last night? Did you have heart palpitations when you woke up in the morning?
Yeah.
It's very common that that happens. Or, and this is typical, all of a sudden the bank or the bonding company or one of your biggest clients says, gee, David, we've done work together for a number of years, and the stuff we do with you is rather personal and confidential or sophisticated. What happens if something happens to you? And thus begins the journey. So it's either internally driven by the business owner, or it's externally driven by someone who thrusts upon a business these plans that need to be presented so that people will continue to lend money or do business with you or invest capital, et cetera.
So tell me two, three things of where somebody goes to find the information to start this process, other than Google, which is the easy answer.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, where exactly should they start? What's the first block of this building process?
That's a great question, David. I would say to anyone listening to us that it begins from within. And I like to draw the analogy that in order for succession planning to have any credibility, let alone be implemented, the people who are in a position to make these leadership decisions have to have an alignment of their head, their heart, and their stomach. And unless all three of those are aligned, it becomes a lot of conversation that goes nowhere. It becomes a lot of legal and accounting fees that pile up that don't result in any documents get signed or acted upon. And it turns into a let's never talk about this again because that was a giant waste of time and frustration. So to begin, it's incumbent upon the person who has the leadership responsibilities to say to themselves first and to the people they work with as colleagues and to their vendors, their clients, their community, we're going to make sure that what we built here is sustained onto the next ownership, whether it's succession of family businesses or ownership to an external owner. So first, a heart-to-heart conversation with yourself that begins to recognize that you have to align how you think, how you feel, and does it instinctively make sense to go in this direction? Thus, my analogy of you got to align your head, your heart, and your gut.
So let's split into two parts for a second. One would be the owner or ownership family, you know, family business or someone who owns a business. And then the corporation side, where it's really owned by an investor group, or it's owned by stock, or it's owned by something else, or different. Because I'm going to break that up into two parts for just a second. So on the ownership side, it really becomes the whole family or the whole a group of owners pulling together and starting to think about this, right? This is where they have to start aligning themselves before they go out and start talking to everybody else. Would mm-hmm. that be a great place to start? Or yeah. what if there's conflict within that? How do you address that part of it first?
Yeah, well, you're very wise to point out the distinction between a company that's run by either professional ownership or a public company compared to a private family business. And those are much more challenging, frankly, because you got family, you got business, you got emotion, you got money, and they're always in the same room at the same time.
No problem could be there. No, nothing.
And that's actually where I thrive. I grew up in a family business. I understand those dynamics. And someone who's sitting at that table, whether it's someone like you or me, everyone who's has an emotional or a financial interest in the family business needs to know that the professional is not there to call balls and strikes or to choose winners and losers, but rather to make sure that everyone has been heard and understood. And until you've accomplished that, that everyone knows that you understand how they think and how they feel and what matters, you're not going to make any progress. But if you can, and there are people like myself who've got a track record of doing this over a long period of time, once everyone's been heard and understood, then you can put forward the suggestions that will enable these families, business, and money to actually implement decisions that will assure that the family dignity is left intact, that the business has a future that can survive and thrive in an uncertain economic future, and more importantly, that the employees, particularly coming out of the HR office, that there's a confidence, there's a radiation of confidence and vision that there is a plan and we're all going to make this work together.
We're talking with Phil Harriman. He is a chartered financial consultant and a partner at LaBelle & Harriman. Phil, we talked a little bit about the family owner, the owner, or the one-person owner, or a group of owner situation. How does it now differ for a corporation or a public corporation where we have stock interests and there's really a board of directors and there may be in a family business, but really, you know, a corporate board of directors? How does it change the thinking, or is it kind of the same?
The analogies are the same, although I would say, as you rightly point out, the distinction in the public business environment, the board of directors and the meetings, and there's a lot more formalities and actual discipline that goes into making decisions that are implemented by the executives. And it's maybe oversimplified, but the same could be said of a family business, a governmental entity, a professional association, or a public corporation. And that is, they have a board of directors who come in and are sort of looking at the business from a whole different perspective. And their job is to set policy, strategy, and budget. Then it's the executive's responsibility to implement strategy, policy, and budget. And if they do that well, the business succeeds. They get compensation, recognition that they can build upon. And most especially in that environment, it's incumbent for a board of directors, I believe, to make sure that the executives not only are implementing policy, strategy, and budget, but also preparing the next line of leaders to come in and take their job. Should they be recruited away? Should they unfortunately run into a place where they're disabled, or even worse, they pass away? There has to be, particularly in a public company, what's the plan if you're not here to lead the way?
So we've talked about that key starting block. Once somebody's aligned, get their head, their heart, and their stomach all aligned, and everything's in good shape, what's the next step? What's the next process that you take them through?
Everyone wants to know, what's the business worth, and how am I going to get paid for all my hard work that didn't show up in my W-2 income? And that naturally is the place that everyone goes to is, okay, we know we want to do this. We've communicated through our HR professionals and other family business stakeholders. We've shared it with our bonding company, our banks, that we're embarking on this process. The next best step is to take, okay, if we're ready to begin the journey, what's the destination? And too often, particularly in family business, David, there's this sense that if the the patriarch or the matriarch of the business says, I'm ready to go into succession planning, that doesn't mean they have to retire. And that's typically where there's resistance, because the business owner has been doing this all of their career. They don't know anything differently, and they're afraid that if they let go, so to speak, that they're going to get flushed out of the way. And our view is to help business owners recognize that you can go through an orderly transition of the future of the business, but it doesn't mean you have to leave, that you have to retire. And oftentimes, once that has been vetted and there is an acknowledgement that David may not own the company anymore, but he's still going to work here, it's a whole different attitude that people bring to the conversation.
We're talking with Phil Harriman. He's a partner with LaBelle and Harriman. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Phil Harriman. He's a chartered financial consultant and partner at LaBelle and Harriman. Phil, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we're talking about succession planning. And before anybody drives off the road, please realize that this is actually very important. I know how this is. People go succession planning, their eyes glaze over, their heads roll back. But the reality is, HR professionals and business leaders have to know how important this truly is. And it is the buzz right now out there. There's no question mm-hmm. about that. Phil, we've talked a little about the kind of the key points in terms of succession planning, what it is and so forth. How long does this process really take? You know, I know that in terms of the succession planning, there's a lot of parts to this. It deals with people from the HR side. It deals with leadership and owners in terms of understanding what they need to understand and do. And then there's the documents, the process, the legals, all this part. And there's probably the answer you're probably going to give me is it depends, I'm sure, like an attorney. But what's the typical length of time that this could take?
Well, let me give you a couple of experiences that I've had in my career. I've seen succession planning happen with a phone call. I remember vividly a call from one of my clients who said the owner of the company's just died in a car accident. You got to have a succession plan that's going to take, relatively speaking, a few days or a couple of weeks, and it's done in an emergency, crisis, emotional environment. And I've had some that have taken years because the owner of the business will talk about it but doesn't want to do anything about it because they're afraid that if they do something about it, they no longer become relevant. Yeah. So succession planning is going to happen. It's either going to get thrust upon you or you're going to wake up one day and realize, boy, if I had done some planning, I wouldn't be in this financial dire straits. Or you can make it a normal part of the process and convey to your employees and to the other owners that you're ready to embark on that phase of the journey that, frankly, could be the most rewarding of your entire career. To see something that you built and made your life's work benefit so many others, to then watch it get transferred to the next set of owners, whether it's internal or external, and watch what they do can be a rewarding time in your professional career. So it's going to happen. It's either going to happen because something happens to you, or it's going to happen because something happens to the market that you're in, or it's going to happen because you recognize this could be the most rewarding part of your business career.
So we've talked a little about the financial side of it a little bit. Let me ask you about the role HR plays in this, or the role that, you know, the human resource person, whether it's a financial person that's taking on the role of HR, or whether it's just the HR person in the company. How is the messaging important to the team itself? How important really is that, and how does HR play that role?
Boy, that is the most important part of the process, and frankly, it's the most often overlooked part of the process. Too often, these conversations start, as they should, in a very confidential, closed environment where the philosophies and the dollars and the challenges and the pitfalls are put on the table and vetted. And then it tends to get into an environment where it's about dollars and cents and legal documents and other, shall we say, details that need to be addressed. And then there tends to be this announcement, big announcement. The business has been sold, or so-and-so has now sold their stock, or so-and-so has now moved into this position. And it can shake the foundation of the culture of the company. Whereas if the HR folks who are charged with developing the messaging and the one-on-one communication, which often happens, if that part of the equation, back to my analogy earlier in the program where I talked about we need to align your head, your heart, and your stomach, the HR function tends to be more of the heart and stomach to me when it comes time to implement new directions for a company. So engaging the HR professionals early on in the decision-making so that they can understand why these decisions were made, what they're intended to do going forward, so that when they are put out there in small group meetings or one-on-one meetings with employees explaining what's happening, that they're seen as being in the know, that they have been entrusted with the big picture, if you will, and that they're guiding employees and other people who have an interest in the organization to know, hey, there is a plan. It's good. It's based on some sound values and principles that the HR folks can transfer easily. Because as we all know, when a business owner relays a decision to the next person and he or she does it to the next person and it finally gets to the loading docks, for lack of a better analogy, that story is going to change a lot. And so to do it by a memo, so to speak, as opposed to the HR person being able to meet in small groups and explain firsthand what we're doing, why, and how it benefits them. And that's, at the end of the day, what most employees want to know is, how does it benefit me?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that that's so important here because, really, companies are simply a bunch of people that have got together and are doing a mission, whatever that mission may be, or a tactical process. The reality is that HR plays a big role because succession planning is about retention as well, and about not anytime there's doubt, right? Anytime there's doubt or questioning where the vision of the company is going, what exactly is happening with the company, you know, is there something going on? What's behind the scenes? It creates doubt. And today, with the market being so volatile in terms of employees having options again, which they haven't had in a while, but they are right now having options, I think it's important for them to know that what is the process that's going on, that there is people thinking about it, that there are processes being put in place, and that they will know when it's time to know, and that they then feel better about, I think, overall, the organization.
Agree? Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's when they go home and they tell their spouse or their significant other what's going on in the organization, and it's that person. That's another generation away from the first person who made a decision. If their reaction is, oh, that doesn't sound good, are you sure you shouldn't be looking for another job? Boy, I'm hearing that these things are take on a life of their own, and before you know it, you could get laid off. Or any suggestion based on the unknown is an opportunity for challenges and chaos that you didn't anticipate.
Oh, no. And, I mean, that changes everything. When you lose a key player because they don't, or realize that they may be part of that secession plan, that could be a real big hit to an organization.
Absolutely. And it's often it's the unknown that drives the fear that makes people make decisions that they perhaps wouldn't have made had they been fully informed as to what was going on and why.
Going back to the ownership part where there's a family business, how often does, if you, for lack of a better word, the rest of the family, the spouse, the child, the, you know, other parts of the family get involved with this process, or how much does it really influence the process at times?
It is perhaps the most overlooked part of the family dynamics. And it often happens in a family business where in two phases. One phase is a child is working in the business and they've been there for a decade or two decades and they're just waiting for the day that mom or dad decides that it's now their turn to run the business. And they start getting frustrated because they've put their heart and soul into the business. They see mom and dad living well and having a lot of leisure time. And they wonder, gee, I've been driving the value of this business that I may have to actually pay for the growth that I've helped create. That's one. Second is in the environment that I've just described, there may be siblings who aren't in the business, who feel that because it's a family business, they should bear some of the fruit of the success of the business. And now you've got a generation of people who aren't physically working in the business, who may be receiving some financial reward because they're a member of the family. And you've got the dynamic of now the son or daughter waiting to have mom or dad decide when it's time to sell so they can own. And then you've got the son or daughter dealing with brothers or sisters who may not be in the business. And when that emotion starts to present itself, it tends to cause the matriarch and the patriarch of the family to just block it all out, freeze it, and ignore it.
Well, you know, I think about the fact you talked about earlier about somebody who unfortunately, you know, unexpectedly dies. And then you've got, we need to do a succession plan, it's urgent. But you've also got the situation where the legal aspect of the will or the document that goes along with that, which may be in direct conflict with what the succession plan should be. Mm. So it is all brought together into one big, massive process, isn't
well,
it?
Which is why, you know, when the head and when the heart and the stomach are aligned around these emotional and financial issues, it's ultimately the head that's got to prevail. That's why you need the legal support system and the tax and the accounting people to help make reality happen around the documents to match up what people are feeling and thinking.
We're talking with Phil Harriman. He is a partner at LaBelle and Harriman. You know, Phil, we've talked a little bit about, obviously, the role HR can play in this. We have a couple minutes before we go to break, but can you give me an example of when an HR person or an HR professional or someone who was in that role really took the time to make this process work in an organization? Give us a little story about that if you have one.
Several, actually. And it's the wise business owner who, once they've got the family matters addressed and is ready to embark on the implementation phase, that they bring in the HR person and they say to them, we are now ready to move in this direction and we want you to be the lead person on how we roll this out to the employees. And I vividly remember one in which the owner of the company called a company-wide meeting. He had to do it because of several locations over a full day, and brought the HR person with them and said, here's my vision and my strategy. Here's what we're about to embark upon. And the HR professional will be the person from now on that you should feel free, if you have questions, to ask her where we are in this process, what are the next steps. We want everyone in the company to know what we're doing, and we've entrusted our HR expertise here to help communicate with you where we are in that process.
Well, you know, I think they do play an incredibly important role in terms of understanding that people are really the company. And I said it before, but I emphasize that a lot because we hear a lot that it's a company and right. What that really means. And at the end of the day, all it is people.
Yep.
Really in terms
Andrew
of
Andrew Carnegie said it so well. Take away all my factory, all my machinery, but leave me my people, and in a couple of years, I'll have it all back.
No, it's very true. We're talking with Phil Harriman. He's a partner of Bell & Harriman, a chartered financial consultant. We've been talking about succession planning and why it's important to leaders, to owners, and to HR professionals. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
If you'd like to be a guest on the HR Power Hour or be a show sponsor, send David an email today at info@hrpowerhour.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com. And today we've been talking with Phil Harriman. He's a chartered financial consultant and partner at LaBelle & Harriman. And we're talking about succession planning. Phil, we've talked a lot about in the first couple segments here about what succession planning kind of is, how we kind of make the process work a little bit, and kind of what roles the HR person and HR professionals can play in it. Let's flip this around. What are some of the pitfalls? What are some of the things that can happen that really can mess this up for a company, for an individual, for an owner, and even the HR and the team around them?
I would begin this phase of our conversation, David, by saying it's been my experience that business owners don't plan to fail. They fail to plan. And it's an old sort of axiom that you've probably heard way too many times, but it is so true. And the pitfalls of not planning are so glaring that it often becomes to outsiders an example of, wow, why didn't they see this coming? Why didn't they recognize that this valued employee was not happy? Or how come they didn't recognize that the children who wanted to ascend to the ownership of the business decided to leave and go work somewhere else? And those pitfalls are glaring examples of what I would describe as a couple of personality traits of executives or business owners. One is the person who just keeps everything real close to the vest. They don't want to tell anything to anybody about what they're thinking or feeling for fear of making a mistake or showing that they may be vulnerable or that they need help. Or there's the other person who just talks incessantly about, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and the business is good, and business is not good, and trouble's ahead, and oh, good times are now rolling, and they're inconsistent in their approach to communicating where they see the future of the business. Or there is this paralysis through analysis. They just continue to analyze every little detail and never seem to get to a place where everyone knows that progress has been made. So the pitfalls that I have experienced are the ones in which the people who have all the power and, frankly, the responsibility don't welcome in the rest of their team, particularly the HR professionals, to say, let's talk about how we prepare the business for the future. Let's talk about how we attract and retain key people to lead certain aspects of the business into the future.
You know, I think that's so important. I think you talk about leaders and their challenges, right, are really themselves.
Right.
Number one, it's themselves. You talked earlier about alignment. But in fact, I think that's where the team, whether it be the board or whether it be the owner's group, whatever it is that they have, really has to be honest with the owner, right? Part of the problem is that sometimes they're not honest, mm-hmm. or they fear
right.
that they could lose their job, or they right. could fear, I don't know if I could really say this to him or her, you know. But at the end of the day, they have to hear it, don't they?
They do.
To understand that.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And it's the whether it's HR or the chief financial officer or someone who has the ear on an ongoing basis of the owner, who has the courage to tell him or her what they need to know, not necessarily what they want to hear. And that may be a frightening place to be for the moment. But it's been my experience that after that conversation has been held, the wise business owner will recognize, A, that took a lot of courage. B, it's the right thing for us to be talking about. And C, this person actually truly does care about me and our business and our future.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We do a lot of executive coaching, as I think you know. And a lot of the times we see that this is used to try to get senior leadership to understand what their strengths and weaknesses are and get them to be more open and communicative. Because sometimes it's never been that way in the past. Why should they do something different from the future?
Mm-hmm.
Right, I've been successful for 30, 40 years. Why do I have to listen? You know, I've always told how it's going to be. But times have changed, mm-hmm. and they have to change with it. And that's one of the challenges I see, is that sometimes people just don't listen very well.
That's true. And because someone has a title, it seems as though they're what they say goes. And ultimately, of course, it does, because they do have a title. But the more effective ones, the really successful ones, create an environment where alternating opinions are welcomed and encouraged. If you just tell people what they want to hear, then they're going to get blindsided at some point because reality is going to pass them by.
What's another pitfall that you see in terms of commonly found in organizations or within this process that you teach people to work around?
I think it's almost like a blinding glimpse of the obvious, that when a business owner finds him or herself in a challenging situation because they've lost a key employee who's left to go somewhere else, and they ask themselves, how could that person be so naive to leave this great company to go work for those people? And the pitfalls are when the people around him or her don't say, well, because he or she was afraid that they didn't have a future, or that you've already decided that your relative is going to have that position, or something that leads them to believe that they needed to leave because the business owner sent messages, verbal or nonverbal, that indicated that that person didn't have a bright future with the company.
You know, it reminds me of a quick story years ago when I was working for a company. I won't name which one publicly right now, but I'm sure you could figure out one of the companies I was working for. And I went to give my notice because I had signed to join another organization. And I went and saw the president, who I knew very well. And I walked in and I told him, unfortunately, I'm going to be and made the decision to leave. And he said, well, I just don't accept your resignation. It was just one of these moments in my life where I went, excuse me? And he said, no, you're not going anywhere. He said, what will it take? I said, no, I've made that decision. I'm going to move on. You know, I've already accepted another position. He goes, why? And I gave the reason. I said, I don't see the vision. I don't see where we're going, and I don't get it. And he said, no, we're being very successful. You just can't see it. You've got to trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had a good relationship, but that's a little too late,
mm-hmm.
right? And ultimately, I did go on, and ultimately the organization struggled, and other things have happened to it since. But the reality is that exactly what you're talking about. A little bit of head. Somebody told me what the future was, even though in this particular case, I saw the handwriting on the wall. People will levitate to know what is good and what is bad. And you can get good people to stay if you really show them a vision.
It's communication. And it's clarity, and it's being candid. And if you can be clear and be candid and share a vision, you can get through any challenge or succeed at any opportunity. And what often happens, and this is the biggest pitfall that I've seen, is that there's either no one wants to talk about the elephant in the room, or there is so little communication that the fear of the unknown becomes so powerful that you think you got to make decisions because what you're fearing is actually happening, when often it's not.
You know, we've talked a little bit about some of the pitfalls here. Do you have a, I'm sure you do, you have a story of someone who has taken the process from start to finish and how HR got involved in it and made it really work. And take me through that process. We have you know, a good segment here. Take me through how you got involved and how you helped this process and what the end result was. If you could, obviously, you could protect the name to protect the guilty.
Sure.
Okay? Make that happen.
Sure. Real, at 100 miles an hour, at 30,000 feet, I would describe it as a company owned by three family members. And over the years, two of the family members had retired but still owned stock in the company, and they decided that one of their longtime employees had earned their confidence and ought to be elevated to the day-to-day operations, and named him the president of the company. And everything was going along just fine until one of the shareholders got into financial trouble and needed to sell their shares of stock. The company wasn't in the best financial condition at the time to do that, but they made it happen. That put tremendous strain on the company, and as it went to renew its line of credit, the bank started asking some more difficult questions and demanding some more tighter financial controls put on the company. And in the midst of all this, another shareholder became terminally ill and passed away. And as a result of this, the president of the company now was in a place where he had banks, bonding companies, employees, customers, everybody descending upon the company wanting to know if they were going to get paid. Is this work going to get done? Are these people still going to have a job? And he wisely brought in the vice president of human resources, and they developed a communication strategy to all of the stakeholders that I just described. And they spent the next 18 months in very difficult financial and business uncertainty. But the key employees stayed. The banks got enough confidence in the new owner/leadership to renew their funding, et cetera, et cetera. And when they began to enjoy success again, the president then decided, you know what, we're never going to go through this again. We're going to develop a bench of future leaders in this company, and we're going to communicate with them the role that they play and where they fit, and we're going to make sure our bonding companies and our banks and our customers know who these people are. We're going to help establish relationships amongst all of these folks, and it's all going to, if you will, ebb and flow through the HR team.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, that's a great success story, because too often people forget about each part of that process that mm-hmm. you talked about, especially the people part of it. Mm-hmm. Because especially in today's social media environment, negative news travels pretty darn fast, and ambiguity does as well.
Right.
And yeah. if you can help contain some of that communication in terms of putting it out pretty quick mm-hmm. and giving some answers, you can really save yourself a lot of headaches.
No question about it. I draw the analogy to, for the Mainers who are listening, they'll appreciate that we have a lot of wild rivers, and river rafting is a pastime that many people enjoy, particularly in the summer months, of course. And the analogy is that if you want to influence your business, it's very similar to taking a raft down the Penobscot River. If you paddle faster than, or you paddle slower than the movement of the river, you can control where you're going. If you just lift your paddles and drift, you're going to end up in some pretty dangerous situations, including being wrapped around a rock with thousands of gallons a second pouring over you. It's the same in succession planning. You're either going to paddle faster than the movement of the decision makers around you, or slower than, to control the outcome.
We're talking with Phil Harriman, chartered financial consultant and partner with Bell & Harriman. We're talking about succession planning. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking with Phil Harriman. He's a chartered financial consultant and a partner at LaBell & Harriman. And we're talking about succession planning, why it's important to business owners, leaders, and HR professionals. And Phil, I want to tell you, it's been a great show today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
You know, let me give the audience a little overview of why you're talking about it, who you are, and kind of what you've done. You know, you've talked a little bit about the things you've done in terms of succession planning. Give them an overview of you. Tell me about your firm. Tell me a little bit about you.
Oh, thank you. Geez, free commercial. That's unusual. Thank you. I grew up in a family business. My grandfather started some supermarkets, and he attracted my father and my uncle to be the second generation to run our supermarket business. We had a store in Gorham, Maine, and another one in Yarmouth, Maine. And I went to Hudson University to study accounting, thinking I was going to be the third generation to run the family business. And that was my life's goal at that point in my life. And heartbreakingly, my father was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and the business was abruptly sold, i.e. in succession planning. And I found myself looking for another career. And I was very attracted to the financial services profession and found myself just enamored with how small businesses work. And for many of you who work in a small business or own one, you know what I'm about to say. You're the chief financial officer, you're the chief HR personnel, you're the chief finance person, et cetera, et cetera. And I just found it very comfortable to be able to go and sit down with business owners and talk about the challenges and the opportunities that they face. That was 35 years ago, literally right out of college. And today, there's 17 people who work with me. We do everything from manage retirement plans to investments for individuals. We do financial planning for people who are thinking about how they pay for college tuition or how they're going to retire. And my area in the firm is to specialize in helping family businesses go from one generation to the next or one owner to the next. And how do we attract and retain and incentivize good key people to reward them for their loyal service to the company?
Well, you know, it's yeoman's work to do that, no question about it.
It's an honor. You know, whenever you get invited to sit at a table where someone's going to talk to you about their family and their money and their business all in the same room at the same time, I truly consider it an honor.
No, I agree. It absolutely would be. Tell me a little bit about, you know, the fact that succession planning has become a buzz term right now. We're seeing a lot of companies doing it. We're seeing a lot of companies looking at making this happen in their organizations. Where are you seeing opportunities or challenges today in terms of succession planning? And how do you think it's going to be changing over the next year or so?
It's going to happen. It's happening, as you say, David, so rapidly, but it's subtle. These aren't things you read about in the daily newspaper or here on WLOB News Hour. These are things that are happening very confidentially, but they're happening at a pace that I've not seen in the last decade. And the challenges that I'm seeing are business owners who are now prepared to begin the migration to, let's say, the next generation in the family to run the business. They're discovering that the next generation is not yet ready. They're not fully mature to make all of these key decisions and not fumble it and lose the confidence of the workforce or to lose confidence of the banks or so forth. And they're finding themselves wanting to attract and retain key people who are not family members, who aren't going to own the business, but have the capability of running it for this interim period of time or specialize in an area of the business that the next generation is not yet ready to handle.
So are you seeing them bringing in outside talent at this point? Because that's what I'm seeing in terms of them really looking at someone who can financially stabilize the business, somebody who can be an operations person who can really or sell in terms of being out there marketing the business. That's the talent we're seeing. And then I see them looking at the younger generations. What does it take, Susie, Bobby, Michael, for you to grow to learn this better? Right, and making that
investment. Absolutely right. If you have those skills in operations, sales, finance, executive if you have that experience, there's a lot of family businesses that are looking for someone just like you. And it's a tremendous opportunity to go in and run an organization that you actually can manage and lead and have an influence on in a relatively short period of time. And a lot of the work that we do, and I suspect you may in your area of the HR profession, is how do you create those compensation incentives? Because if you're just going to offer someone a nice W-2 income, you're not keeping up with your competitors. You've got to create an environment where the person that you're going to bring in, who's not going to own the business but perhaps lead or actually run it, that they have a competitive W-2 income. But they also have what we would call the non-qualified, meaning they don't have to go through all of the government regulations that incentivize these key people to deliver results, whether it's sales, workplace safety, profitability, inventory control, whatever it may be, and create measures that say, if you accomplish these things, in addition to your W-2 income, we're going to provide you this additional financial reward, but in order to get it, you got to stay.
Right, the retention part.
You got to stay.
I will tell you, you're absolutely right. The compensation side of our business right now is booming. We have not seen.
You can
that
be so creative. There's no right. formula that that's you right. have to follow.
That's right. You really can. And there's many, many different ways. And that's a whole topic for itself.
We could do that another time.
Another time, we'll do that. Well, Phil, I want to thank you very much for being on the HR Power Hour today. For everybody who is listening to the show, you can go to hrpowerhour.com after this show, and you can find Phil's information, his bio, his link to him, and you can connect, and you can go have him help you make succession plan critical, successful, and to your organization a big success. Thank you, Phil, for being on
the show.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And now your HR tip of the week. According to Bloomberg Business, Steve Denkin, president of National Conflict Resolution Center, he recommends the exchange in regards to a four-step staged structural conflict resolution model that successfully is used by mediators at the National Conflict Resolution Center for more than 25 years. It includes constructive techniques that use a face-to-face meeting while disputing or disruptive employees. Here are the four sections. First, start with an icebreaker. Second, make sure you're truly an active listener. Three, use and encourage positive language. And then four, work forward through sustainable solutions. They should be specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely, or SMART. That's your HR Tip of the Week. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.